got her PhD at the Technical University in Munich. Then she's the postdoc at Argonne National Lab at the University of Chicago, which is now a postdoc at Gerhard Bremer. And she'll be talking about the heat as a part of the new paper.
Okay. Thank you very much for the introduction. Thanks for having me here. It's a real pleasure to be here giving this talk. So today I want to tell you everything about the Higgs, everything about the Higgs boson discovery, what we have learned, and what we expect to learn in the coming years. So we all know that actually July the 4th of 2012 has been a historical date for physics. At CERN, we had the announcement for the discovery of a new particle, or a brand new particle. This discovery actually came after basically 3 decades of experimental searches. These experimental searches were carried actually both in the US and in Europe. And this achievement has been reached by 2 very large experimental collaborations, CMS and ATLAS. If you put all the experimentalists together, we are counting something like 6,000 experimentalists. So by far, these 2 experimental collaborations are the largest experimental collaborations in the history of physics. So as you can imagine, there was a lot of enthusiasm at CERN the day of the announcement of the discovery. But the enthusiasm was not only shared among physicists, because we know that at CERN, there were really a lot of journalists and a lot of media following this discovery, following this announcement. And back then, actually, I got really a lot of questions by friends and family about what is the Higgs? Why it seems so important? And actually, it's also curious to see how many people, how much people were interested to this discovery. So I found recently this website in Google called Google Trends that can give us the histogram for the number of times that people looked for a specific word in Google. You do the exercise with the word Higgs, you find this. And from here, you see very, very clearly the Higgs discovery. It's a very large bump.
So this is why Higgs is important in that
there. That's your parameter. But actually, how this discovery was possible? This discovery was possible at the Large Hadron Collider at CERN. The LHC is colliding protons at very, very high energy. Actually, this is the highest energy that we have ever reached in an Earth-based experiment. The collision is inside this circumference ring, inside this ring with a circumference of something like 27 kilometers. Actually, only after the first 3 years of run, we had this discovery. This discovery was announced independently by the CMS and ATLAS collaborations. And actually, we know that very soon the energy will be lifted up, and we'll be speaking about an energy of collision of 14 TeV. And actually, the energy carried by the beams of protons is kind of equivalent to the energy that would be developed by something like 400 tons of train speeding at 100 miles per hour. So we are really speaking about a huge energy. And thanks to this large energy, the Higgs was discovered. So what I want to tell you in this talk. So this talk, as you will see, is divided in 3 parts. So the first part, I want to argue how important has been the Higgs boson discovery. So how much we learned for particle physics with this discovery. And the conclusion, I can anticipate a little bit, is that actually now, for the very first time, we have a model, the standard model for particle physics, that is self-consistent, okay? But actually, I will show you, I will discuss a little bit that there are really many open problems, open questions in particle physics, in fundamental physics, that might be telling us that we need something more, some new particles. And I will show you in part 2 and part 3 of this talk that we have 2 completely different ways of discovering new particles in the coming years of the LHC. Either directly, at the LHC, at this high energy collider, or indirectly at completely different type of experiments. Okay? So basically, said in other words, what I will do is to put the LHC in beyond in the middle, beyond what I mean is all the other high energy machines, and show you how we expect to be able to probe our new physics theories, either directly or indirectly. And I will show you what is the role of the Higgs boson in this task, and how we expect to be able to probe new physics really using this particle that we have discovered a few years ago. Okay, so that's my plan for the three parts of this talk. Let me start with the first part, so the self-consistency of the standard model. Okay. So what was the status of particle physics before 2012? Before 2012, I could have put all the particles that we already discovered in this slide. So we knew the existence of quarks and leptons, as well as gauge bosons that are responsible of exchanging forces between quarks and leptons. We know that there are two different charges for quarks and leptons, three different flavors, and three different types of gauge bosons, okay? But the problem here is that we didn't have, before 2012, something really final, a final answer of why a lot of these particles here have a mass. And actually, the mass is quite large. So for example, for the top, we are speaking about a mass that is much, much, much larger than the mass of a proton, okay? So we needed, and we knew that we needed something more than just this simple slide. In 2012, we had the discovery of the Higgs. And now finally, we know that we have a particle that is responsible of giving mass to at least some of these particles that we have here. And so for this reason, we as theoretical physicists believe that the Higgs is not yet another particle. It's not simply, you know, an additional quark, but it's really a crucial particle for our understanding of nature. If you focus on the gauge setter of the standard model to the W and the Z, we know that we had the discovery of the W and the Z at CERN back in 1983, so quite a bit of time ago. This discovery was followed by basically a decade of experimental measurements, precision measurements of the Z properties. Okay, these measurements were carried both at LAP at CERN and at SLC at SLAC. So this is from the point of view of the experiment. So we know that from the 90s, we know a lot about the massive gauge bosons of the standard model. From the point of view of our standard model, we know that theorists can predict pretty well the Z properties, so the Z interactions with quarks and leptons. But what we need is to specify the Higgs boson mass to have predictions. Okay? And also what we know is that actually the standard model is not giving us a prediction for the Higgs boson mass. So we needed to measure this last free parameter of the standard model. And it's quite interesting, curious to read, you know, pioneers' papers about the Higgs boson phenomenology. I'm taking this paper back in 1976. Back then, we really had no idea about the Higgs boson mass. It could have been much, much, much lighter than a proton, much, much more massive. And then also, it's curious to read in the conclusions of this paper that back then there was some skepticism about, you know, pushing for a large experimental search for this new particle. Fortunately, this suggestion was not followed. We had a lot of searches, and finally we discovered the Higgs, and we measured its mass. But let's see a little bit better how it works and how we were able to discover a Higgs. So first of all, we need to produce a Higgs boson. I already said that the LHC is colliding protons at a very, very high energy. So as a matter of fact, it is colliding the constituent of the proton, so the up and down quarks, as well as the gluons that are keeping together the quarks inside the proton. But then what we know is also that the standard model is telling us that the Higgs couples only quite weakly with the up and down quarks as well as gluons. That's why you expect to have you know, a small production of Higgs bosons. So the Higgs event is a kind of a rare event at LHC. And the main production mechanism for the Higgs is in what we call gluon fusion, so thanks to the interaction of the Higgs with two gluons. But we see from this histogram here that actually the production of the Higgs is really, really rare. So you need something like 10 to the 10 proton-proton collision to get out something like two Higgses. Okay? So very, very rare event. Then there are additional production mechanisms. There are even, you know, with a smaller rate. So from here, we see what is really the real problem, and the main reason for which it took basically 3 decades of experimental searches for finding this new particle. But nevertheless, the LHC is this awesome machine that was already able to produce something like 600,000 Higgs boson events. So by now, we have relatively large statistics for Higgs that we produce. But then, what do we see really at the LHC? We know that the Higgs is decaying pretty quick, with a lifetime of something like 10 to the minus 22 seconds. And what we see is something like that. So this is an actual picture taken from the CMS collaboration of one of the 600,000 Higgs events that we produce. Here, this kind of central mass that we see from here is what happens at the kind of center of collision. We have a lot of quarks and gluons going around. And then we see that here we have 2 photons actually coming out from the Higgs boson decay, okay? So this is one of the ways in which the Higgs can decay. And actually, this is a very interesting way because thanks to the fact that the Higgs is decaying to 2 photons, we can finally measure relatively accurately the Higgs boson mass. So from this plot, I'm showing the actually the events recorded by the LHC, by CMS, as a function of the Higgs boson mass. And compared to this solid line, that would be what we expect if there was no Higgs boson. So what we would expect from the standard model without the Higgs. We see this little bump here, and this little bump corresponds, in fact, to a new particle. From here, we can read off the Higgs boson mass, 125 GeV. So finally, for the first time, we had this measurement of the last free parameter of the standard model. Okay. So now everything is changing because now we can really predict the Higgs phenomenology in the framework of the standard model. We can also predict the Z properties in the framework of the standard model. We really just needed this number. So we know in the framework of the standard model the probability for each Higgs boson to decay. So we know that the highest probability is for a Higgs to decay to BB bar, for example, followed by these other decay modes. So all these numbers, all these predictions can be tested and will be tested in the future of the LHC. So for example, for the number of 2 photons that you get out of a Higgs, we know exactly how many events because we know how many events we'll be producing for a Higgs. We know the probability for a Higgs to decay to 2 photons. So now that we have this number, we can have really clear ideas about the phenomenology of the Higgs in the framework of the standard model. But this is not the only thing, because as I said a couple of slides ago, also the Z properties can now be predicted in the framework of the standard model. So what you can do is to put together measurement of the Higgs mass, measurement of the Z properties back in the 90s, and finally test the set consistency of the standard model. This, of course, you could have not done before when we didn't know exactly the Higgs boson mass. So in this paper here, together with 2 collaborators at the University of Chicago, we really checked how the standard model is self-consistent just after the Higgs boson discovery, so just after the first measurement of the Higgs boson mass. In this kind of busy plot, this busy plot is here just to show you all these observables that have been measured in the past, mainly in the 90s. Finally, we put the Higgs boson mass here. We do a test of self-consistency. We can compute a p-value that is giving us how, indeed, well the global fit of all this observable is performing. A p-value at around 1 means that we have a good fit. The p-value is relatively large. That means that we have a self-consistent theory. Okay? And this is really a crucial result because, in principle, we didn't really know. Suppose that, in this plot here, suppose that you have, instead of a bump here, a bump at much larger masses. Say that you have a bump at 300 GeV, and look at what p-value you could get out. So before of the Higgs boson discovery and before of the measurement of the Higgs mass, we didn't know if the standard model was really making sense at all for electroweak symmetry breaking. And it's also interesting to keep in mind that some of these observables listed here will be better measured in the future by the LHC. So we'll know even more about the self-consistency of the standard model. Okay? So this is a first big result that we were able to obtain just thanks to the measurement of the Higgs mass. But this is not the full story, actually. And the reason is that the measurement of the Higgs mass can tell us also something about our universe. And the reason is that now that we have this measurement, M Higgs, what we can do is to see what the electroweak minimum of our universe, how the electroweak minimum of our universe is performing. And indeed, if the electroweak minimum where we are is stable with the time. And actually what we learn once that we fix this Higgs boson mass is that actually the electroweak minimum where we are is not the only minimum of the theory of the standard model, but we'll have an additional minimum at very, very, very high energies, Trans-Planckian energies. So what will happen is that actually at a certain point, our electroweak minimum will decay. And so what we learn, thanks to this measurement of the mass of the Higgs, that we are in this kind of intriguing and critical point in which our universe is metastable. That means that you will have transient transition from here to here, but with a very, very long lifetime, longer than the age of the universe. Again, this is a quite interesting point because we see that it's very, very sensitive to the mass of the Higgs. If the mass of the Higgs was slightly smaller, we would be in an unstable situation, so a very dangerous situation in which you have a potential like this, but then the transition is much quicker. If instead the mass of the Higgs was heavier, then we would be in a completely very comfortable, stable situation. Okay? So this is also another very, very big result that we obtained thanks to the measurement of the Higgs boson mass that is telling us something very much beyond the LHC experiment that we are doing, something very deep for our universe. So a very big theoretical question now is understanding why indeed we ended up here and what are the consequences, okay?
So, I mean, this is assuming that there is just a standard model and nothing else, right?
Correct,
right.
Yeah.
But of course, we know there is something, like there's dark matter, right?
Right,
so
right.
So cannot be correct.
I fully agree with you. So this is to say, okay, assume that there is nothing else, and let's see what happens. Of course, this exercise would have been even more interesting if the answer was that you are here, right? That you are in an instability region, so you really need something else, and then you know the scale of at which this something else is happening. But I fully agree with you that this is a very, this is a very, very important hypothesis. But so, what is now that we have a Higgs, we know that there is this particle participating to electroweak symmetry breaking. One of the very important open questions to me is to understand if indeed this particle that we have discovered is the full story for electroweak symmetry breaking. It can be that there is not only one Higgs boson that we have discovered, but there are several of them. And actually there are very well motivated theories as supersymmetry that are predicting actually more than one Higgs boson, more than one particle responsible of electroweak symmetry breaking. So one of the big questions for the future is to try to understand how theories with multiple Higgs perform and how they can be tested in the coming years, especially at the LHC. So presently there are some experimental searches for additional Higgs bosons. These are the two leading searches for additional Higgs bosons, either decaying to taus or bottom quarks. Up to now, there have not been striking indications for the presence of additional Higgs bosons. So experimentalists were able to set bounds on theories with additional Higgses. Typically, when you see these plots, it means that if you're above here, you're excluding new theory. This parameter here is a parameter that is giving us the strength of the coupling of these Higgs with tau leptons or bottom quarks. This is the mass of the additional Higgs, okay? And also there are searches for charged Higgs bosons. But why I'm showing you this experimental slide? I'm showing you this experimental slide because I strongly believe that it's very important to have exchange of ideas between theorists and experimentalists. As an example, in this paper here that I've written with some collaborators in the Chicago area, plus some collaborator in Barcelona, we were showing that actually this search for a heavy Higgs going to BB bar is a very, very important search for the LHC. Actually, in the early stages of the LHC, in the first, say, 1 year or so, or 2 years, there are no searches for this signature, for a heavy Higgs going to BB bar. Experimentalists were thinking that this is a too complicated search. Maybe there are no theories that are really well probed by this search. In this paper, we show that actually there are theories that can be very well probed by search like this. We did also some Monte Carlo study of the feasibility of this analysis at the LHC. And we had a lot of exchange of ideas with experimentalists. And at the end of the day, CMS came out with an analysis basically 1 year after our paper. Okay. So this, I think, is a very important point and a very important topic to follow and to study in the coming years. Because in the coming years of the LHC, we expect to have much more searches for additional Higgs bosons and much more theories that could be tested with these searches. This plot here? Yeah, so let me take this. It's very similar. So here, you are asking the question, is there an additional Higgs which mass you don't know? So this is the Higgs mass that is decaying to taus. Okay. Now, this parameter here on the y-axis is called tangent beta. This is thought in the framework of supersymmetry, where tangent beta is giving us basically the strength of the coupling on this heavy Higgs with bottom quarks and tau leptons. Okay? So of course, the stronger this coupling is, and the more you produce this heavy Higgs, basically. Okay? So this solid line here is the line that tells you if you're above this line, then you're excluding models. So models that are giving you a large value of tangent beta, so a large coupling on these heavy Higgs with tau leptons and bottom quarks, are excluded. Okay? Does it explain that?
Okay. And everything above the black line is excluded?
Correct.
And the errors on the black line are the band?
Correct, correct. And then, okay, you can see the observed and the expected limit, but this is this goes in the details. But overall, above here, you are excluded.
And what would detection look like on a plot like that? If you said, okay, we've detected the Higgs with a certain mass and a value of tangent beta, what does the plot do?
So here, I'm not sure if it is visible, but so this the dotted line is an expected bound. The solid line is the observed bound. So if you start to see an observed bound that is much weaker, that means that you have some excess, basically. So you start to see this solid line that goes up here. Somewhere.
So if the solid line goes outside the band, then you detect it?
Yes, in general, if it is very different from this dotted line, that is the expected limit. Okay? Very good. So this actually ends this first part of the talk. So what I wanted to argue is the importance of this discovery and the importance of having this measurement of the Higgs boson mass as a free parameter of the standard model, okay? But now let me pass to the even more fun topic. That is, we have really strong motivations to believe that there is new physics beyond the standard model. And I want to show you how we expect to probe this new physics in the coming year directly at the LHC. So the two main questions that I have in this last years of research is indeed how are we able as theorists to give a good explanation of the hierarchy problem? Because if you want, now that we have the Higgs discovery, I think that the hierarchy problem is even a more important problem than before of the Higgs discovery. And the reason is that, so if you look at this plot here, so this plot shows you the several Higgs scales, the several physics scales. So we have the scale of an atom, the scale of a nucleus. Then we have the scale of electric interactions. Now, with the Higgs discovery, we know that the Higgs is actually here. We also know that there is an additional physics scale that is the Planck scale associated to gravity. We know that there is this huge hierarchy in between the electric scale and the Planck scale. So the question is, how are we able to explain this hierarchy? And that is telling us that basically the strength of gravity is much, much, much weaker than the strength of the electroweak interactions. So basically, you can do something like that, right? So let's say a few electrons would be able to lift up your hair independently on, you know, in spite of the gravitational force of the entire Earth. But said a little bit more in a mathematical way, less intuitive way, the problem is that indeed we have a theory, the standard model plus, you know, the Planck scale, that is not really telling us why the Higgs is so light if compared to the Planck scale. So basically what you can do to explain a little bit this problem is to write down the mathematical formula for the Higgs potential in the framework of the standard model. From here, you can read the Higgs boson mass, this mu term here. We have learned that is a free parameter. But then you have to introduce the Higgs interactions with the standard model particles. Once you do that, this effective potential is changing. And what is happening is that your Higgs mass, the physical mass, won't depend only on this mu term, but also you have some quadratic sensitivity on the new physics scale. If you put this new physics scale to be the Planck scale, you see that you end up in having a problem, because you need really a large cancellation between this term and this term in such a way to have 125 GeV here. So actually, what is happening if you put numbers is that you are in a situation like this. Okay? Would you be satisfied with a situation like this, with a theory like this? Personally, not. And that's why theorists really think that there should be something that is explaining why we have a light Higgs much, much lighter than the new physics scale associated to gravity. Okay? So this is a theoretical problem. And historically, a lot of attention has been dedicated to supersymmetry as a theory that is possibly addressing this hierarchy problem. Because supersymmetry is a symmetry that is relating each bosonic degree of freedom to a fermionic degree of freedom. So basically, you are kind of doubling the particle content of the standard model. If you do that, what is happening is that you can compute again your Higgs boson mass. And you see that you are canceling the quadratic sensitivity on the Planck scale. And the reason is that basically you have to sum up the interaction of the Higgs with the standard model particles, as with the top, to the interactions of the Higgs with the corresponding superpartners, so with the stop. Okay? And when you do that, you have an automatic cancellation of this quadratic sensitivity. But then what you are left with is a logarithmic sensitivity plus actually a quadratic sensitivity on the mass scale of these new particles, what I call here M SUSY. Okay? For this reason, we really think that to have a natural theory, supersymmetry should have these superpartners that are not incredibly too much heavier than the Higgs boson mass, because otherwise you end up having the same type of problem of naturalness. Okay? So the question is, from this argument, you learn that you need to have relatively light new physics particles, supersymmetric particles, at around the TV scale, at around the electroweak scale. The question is, of course, how we will be able to probe them. But this is a very general argument that doesn't rely necessarily on supersymmetry. There are other theories that are much more recent, as, for example, theories that are called twin Higgs models, for example, that follow kind of a similar argument. So you have a global symmetry, you have additional partners of the standard model particles, and then these additional partners can cancel the quadratic sensitivity of the Higgs mass on this new physics mass scale, so the Planck scale. Okay. So this is what you learn generically from the hierarchy problem and the implication for new physics theories. So it's a kind of a mirror symmetry that is kind of, you can think it about, like really taking a standard model particle and having a partner of that. But contrary to supersymmetry, what supersymmetry does is to take a top. We know the way in which the top interacts with the H bosons of the standard model. And to take a particle, a stop, that has exactly the same way of transforming under the gauge symmetry of the standard model. But actually what you can have and what twin Higgs models are telling you is that the property of transformation of the partners are different than the property of transformation of the standard model particles. Okay? So they can be, for example, completely singlet under the gauge symmetry of the standard model. And nevertheless, they are kind of mirror particles of the standard model particles. So you can think about really doubling the standard model with an additional sector that will have, for example, their own strong interactions and so on. And then you can, again, ask the question of how the Higgs boson mass is performing.
When I was for symmetry, I had this symmetry that helped me say that the mass of the different partners are all the same. How
right.
do I have to fine-tune the mass of this mirror sector?
It's kind of similar if you want. So what you will have generically is still a dependence on the mass scale of these additional particles. So you will have a dependence like this for the twin particles if you want. And then the general message is that you expect to have twin particles that are also not too heavy. Okay? So it's kind of, broadly speaking, is very similar to supersymmetry, just that the particles that you are introducing are kind of different because they interact with the standard model particles in a different way.
If there is a Z2-symmetry, there are
right.
two copies. I mean, formally, there is a Z2-symmetry that relates the two copies, and the Higgs is embedded in a higher, so it's like a Holston boson so there are other Higgses between the two sectors, and the Higgs is a boson of the sim of the breaking of the soft breaking of the symmetry.
So isn't the symmetry Isn't the symmetry anomalous, or have people check that? I mean, under quantum corrections, do you keep the symmetry?
Yes, that's a good question. So there is a lot of work on understanding, how to have really UV complete models for this.
Okay.
So the cancellation that I'm mentioning is something that is happening at one loop level, and we really need to develop these theories to have, some understanding as we have now understanding of supersymmetry.
But is there a sense that do you think it's going to be there at higher loops or?
Right. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I think. So this is a pretty, growing field, and there are a lot of open questions from the theory point of view, and of course from the experimental point of view of how to test these particles. Yeah. But actually, so this is a theory problem. It's not, of course, the only problem in particle physics. Now we'll spend a few words about dark matter. At the beginning of this talk, I showed you that there are additional problems, actually, but let me spend just a couple of words about dark matter. So we know that we have plenty of evidence for the presence of some new form of matter that is dark because it doesn't interact with the photons. And we know also that there is no particle in the framework of the standard model that can be dark matter. We also know that we have really a lot of dark matter, something like 5 times more than the ordinary matter. But beyond this, we really don't know much about dark matter. So I can say what we know for sure about dark matter in a half a slide. Okay, right? And in the past, we really thought a lot about the possibility of having dark matter that is connected to the electrobeam scale. So it's talking to the standard model directly. So we can have a weakly interactive massive particles, so particles with a mass, say 100 GeV, few hundred GeV, interacting with the strength of the weak interactions. And there are plenty of experiments looking for this type of dark matter, and we'll learn much more in the near future, okay, for this type of dark matter. But overall, the message I want to give here is that we really don't know what dark matter is. So I think it's very important to keep a broad approach to the models of dark matter and the searches for that we have for dark matter. Okay. So to summarize, I showed you that there are these two problems that are very, very different. One is more theoretical, one is observational. Both of these problems are telling us that we need new particles. Generically, we can expect that these new particles are somehow related to electrobeam scale. So the question is, first of all, how do we expect to see these particles? And second of all, what is the role of the Higgs? And maybe the Higgs has really a key role for our understanding of these new particles. Okay? So to answer to this first question, let me go back to the LHC. We see that LHCs collide in protons. So from protons, we can go from colliding protons, we can go to the production of new physics particles, right? And I'm actually in this histogram here, I'm showing you kind of three possibilities, right, of new particles, either if they are charged under the strong interactions of the standard model, under the electroweak interactions of the standard model, or if they are completely singlet state. Why I'm showing you this? I'm showing you this is because if you think of going in this direction, so if you think about taking more and more massive new physics particles, or particles that are less and less charged under our own gauge symmetries, then we expect to produce much and much less of them, right? So what we think generically is that going in this direction is kind of difficult. And so, especially, you know, with the early data of the LHC. So I think that a lot of work should go more in this in the direction of probing theories with the completely singlet states. But let me show you, first of all, the most optimistic case of having new particles that are charged under the strong interactions. So let me go back to our stops of supersymmetry. Stops are charged under SU3, so we expect to, in general, to produce them a lot, of course, depending on the mass. Up to now, we have not, we didn't have strong hints for the presence of light stops with the first 3 years, 4 years of run. So what experimentalists were doing is to set bounds on models with light stops. Here is a summary plot that I'm taking from the ATAS collaboration that is putting together the several searches available at the moment as a function of the mass of our stop and as a function of the mass of the LSP, as we call. So the LSP is the lattice supersymmetric particle. Usually these bounds are interpreted in this way in terms of these two masses because the idea is to have models in which the stops are decaying to some standard model particles plus LSP, okay? But then these bounds will depend very, very importantly on the way in which the stops are decaying, okay? For example, here, for this bound here, a stop is decaying to a top plus LSP. So I'm showing this slide because I strongly believe that it's very important to really keep going and studying supersymmetric theories and propose to experimentalists new, you know, new searches that we could have for stops, as we have shown in this paper here, in which we were showing this, we were analyzing models that can predict a large branching ratio for the stop to decay to these particles. And for the, with this decay, actually stops could be much more hidden even if they are light, okay? So this just to give you an idea that actually there are relatively already strong bounds here, the mass, if you cannot read is something like 600 GeV, but they depend very, very importantly on the way in which stops decay, okay? Mina.
How do you make that the dominant theory of the stop?
It's complicated. So actually, so you have to be in a regime of masses in which the stop is pretty light, lighter than, say, the top.
Okay.
And then you are competing with these decay modes here, so not with the top and and then depending on the mass of the star and on the actually also the electroweak sector masses, you can have models actually where this branching ratio is sizable. Sizable doesn't mean, of course, 100%, it can mean 20 or 30%, and could relax quite a bit these bounds here, actually.
Do you have two stops or one stop?
Here you have one light stop. Yeah, maybe we can discuss more about the SUSY spectrum that you can probe in this case.
Yeah.
But so it's not generic, of course, but it's a possibility. And I think it's very important to, you know, try to really maximize the searches that we have and the models that we can probe, basically. So this is for, you know, the optimistic case in which you have particles that are charged under SU3. But, you know, there can be also the pessimistic case in which actually you have only particles that are not charged under our own gauge symmetries, right? So how do you do that? How do you probe those particles? So the framework that I'm thinking about is a framework like this, where you have your standard model, so we are here, and you have your own dark sector, okay? So in the dark sector, of course, dark matter can live, but in principle, not only dark matter, so you could have new forces, say a dark photon, could have new Higgses, new matter fields. So the question is, how are we able, since we live here, to test something that is going on here? And actually, this is a very important question because as I already you know, anticipated a little bit. There are models that are addressing the hierarchy problem with singlet states. Dark matter, again, can live here. So it's very important to understand how to probe these models and how are we able to say something about these models in the coming years. Okay? And what I find very, very interesting is to notice that actually there are just a few ways of writing down some, you know, communication between our standard model sector and the dark sector through some few renormalizable portals, as we call. So we can have the vector portal that is putting in communication a dark photon with a Z of the standard model. We can have a Higgs portal putting in communication the Higgs that we have discovered, a new scalar, and the new scalar belonging to the dark sector. And then finally, you can have the neutrino portal putting in communication the Higgs, standard model SU2 lepton, and some right-handed neutrinos. So these, from the effective field theory approach, these are the only operators of that are renormalizable that you can write down to do this mediation here. Okay. So question is, how you probe these? And what has been not really realized in the past is that the Higgs can be really a unique tool to probe these operators. And the reason is that each of these operators can generate one, what I would call exotic decay of the Higgs. So the Higgs could decay to some standard model particles plus a dark particle. So it could decay to a Z of the standard model and the dark photon, to two new scalars belonging to the dark sector. So you have a range of possibilities for the Higgs to decay to new physics particles. And then, of course, the particular signature will depend on the way in which these new physics particles will decay. So I showed you this histogram for the standard model. So for the standard model, as I said, we know pretty well the way in which the Higgs decay. But then here, we could have a small slice for Higgs decaying to new physics. And actually, this is a unique way to probe dark sectors. And from the experimental point of view, actually, there are basically, in first approximation, basically no searches in the first year of the LHC looking for these exotic signatures of the Higgs. Okay, and for this reason, actually, together with some collaborators so all around the world, actually, mainly in the US, some in Asia, we decided to form a theory working group with the aim of really understanding what are the theories that are predicting these new signatures and what kind of measurements could be performed in the future at LHC. We had the first discussions in a beautiful place in Aspen in the summer of 2012. We came with the first survey document in December 2013 about this possibility, about basically testing dark sector theories using new decay modes of the Higgs. And even more importantly, recently, in December 2014, we got kind of official in the sense that we got a working group in the framework of the LHC Higgs cross-section working group. So this working group is a working group based at CERN, even if nobody's at CERN. But everybody's connecting remotely. And I've been delighted to be elected the theory convener of this working group. Then we have the Atlas and CMS conveners. And the aim is indeed to have exchange of ideas between experimentalists and theorists to really understand how we can probe dark sector models with future Higgs measurements. Okay? And it's pretty nice that last week we had our kickoff meeting and a lot of people connected, both from the theory side and experimental side. So we really believe, I really believe that in the future, we'll get to know really much more about theories for dark sectors using the Higgs boson. Okay? So the aim is actually that in the future we'll see events like this. So this will be, this is not an actual picture of the LHC, but we hope that it will become an actual picture of the LHC, maybe a little bit more good looking. Here in particular, we have a new Higgs decay to two bottom quarks and two muons, for example. And all these signatures have not really been studied yet by the LHC. Okay? So this is completing the second part for looking directly for new physics particles at LHC and showing you the difficulties of looking for dark sectors at LHC and that the Higgs is a really unique particle to probe these dark sectors. Let me pass to the last part, a bit shorter one, about indirect searches of new physics. Because up to now, I really focused on the LHC and this very high-energy collider. But the point is that we know that for high energy physics, we don't have only the LHC, but we have a lot of additional machines that are running at lower energy that can tell us really a lot about new physics models. And historically, we know that we have several discoveries of new particles indirectly. So just as a couple of examples, if you go back to the 70s, when we measured actually the decay of this kaon to two muons. So a kaon is a bound state of a strange quark and a down quark. In the 70s, we measured this decay. We measured the branching ratio for this decay. We discovered that it is actually a very small branching ratio, a tiny branching ratio. Back then in the 1970s, we knew only the existence of three quarks, up, down, and strange. With only these three quarks, our theory, our initial theory, was telling us that the branching ratio was much larger. And so this gentleman here in the 70s, using this measurement, were able to predict the existence of a new quark, the charm. And the charm was actually discovered 4 years after this. Okay? So this is what I would call an indirect discovery, because you are not really producing directly new particle. Here is another example for this discovery of CP variation in kaon mixing. Again, back then in 73, we knew only the existence of two generations of quarks. Measurement of CP violation, prediction of a third generation, and the bottom quark was discovered 4 years after. Okay? So this is just some historical remark. Presently, we have really a huge experimental program for measurement of standard model processes that could tell us indirectly about the presence of new physics. Here is just to give you a feeling of really the effort and the multitude of experiments that are that will be telling us in the future much more than what we know at the moment. Particularly, we have the G-2 of the muon experiment at Fermilab. We have plenty of neutrino facilities. We have B factories in Japan that will be running in a few years. So the question is, what can we learn from this machine? And what type of models will be able to probe? So I want to give you a couple of examples because I find them pretty cool and interesting. So the example is of really using the facilities that we have at Fermilab to probe models with some additional force that is quite hidden to us. So let's see how far we can go using measurements of G-2 and using actually the neutrino facilities that we have at Fermilab and that we'll have in the future at Fermilab. So we know that we have an old measurement of G-2 that is telling us that there is maybe some deviation if compared to the standard model prediction. This might be telling us that we have some new force, a new Z prime coupled to muons. There will be better measurements in the coming years, say 5 years time scale. But then if you have this Z prime, the question is, again, how to test this Z prime at different facilities? In particular, how to use neutrino facilities to do this job? Because if you want, neutrino facilities usually are thought in terms of measuring better and better the masses and mixing of the neutrinos of the standard model. But there is really not emphasis at all on the possibility of discovering new physics at these machines. So I think that this is a very, very important line of research that should be pursued more and more in the future. With some collaborators here in this paper, we proposed a new measurement that could be done at Fermilab. Basically, Fermilab has this high-intensity neutrino beam that is scattered against some matter, some nuclei. And then the proposed measurement that we were analyzing is the possibility of having the extraction from the Coulomb feed of this nucleus of two muons. So this is the process. This is a Feynman diagram. If you have the measurement of this, or the cross-section of this process, if this measurement doesn't match with the standard model prediction, then you can say that there is something new interacting with the neutrinos, as, for example, a new gauge boson interacting with neutrinos. Okay? So I think this is a very important line of research that should be pursued that using experiments that are running now at Fermilab will be running in the future. Another example that I like to give is using actually B factories to discover new physics. We know that in the future we'll have B factories in Japan that will produce an amazing number of B mesons. So we'll be able to measure properties of the B meson much, much better than the measurements that we have at the moment. And in particular, in this paper here that I've done with collaborators here and some collaborators at the University of Oregon, we're showing what models with an extended Higgs sector could be probed measuring some kind of exotic decay modes of the B mesons, as for example, a B meson going to a tau lepton and a neutrino. Of course, again, if you see some mismatch with what is predicted by the standard model, then you will be able to say that there is something that is coupling with the tau leptons and the B meson itself, as for example, a charged Higgs boson. Now, at the moment, the present measurements of this decay are kind of in agreement with the standard model prediction. So again, what you can do is to set bounds on models with light charged Higgs bosons. Again, this is a similar plot as we have discussed before, mass of the charged Higgs and some coupling strength. Everything here has been excluded. But in the future, you know, having a better measurement of this process, we could say that there is a charged Higgs. Okay? So I could have shown you actually these two slides well before of the Higgs boson discovery, because you know G minus 2 in principle doesn't care really of the Higgs. This doesn't care of the Higgs. So what is the role of the Higgs that we have discovered for searching and discovering new physics indirectly? Okay. So the role is pretty simple to explain. So the standard model, as I already said, is predicting pretty well the Go ahead.
In the previous plot, aren't there bounds? We're talking about tangent again. Aren't there bounds from the neutron Higgs searches, heavy Higgs searches?
Generically speaking, yes. We have seen some slides ago.
Yeah.
Of course, it depends a lot on. So here, in principle, you have a charged Higgs mass versus the mass of the neutral additional scalars.
Yes.
If you think to supersymmetry, these two masses are pretty much linked together.
Yeah.
In principle, so there are other theories actually, more general than SUSY, where you have
a large separation.
Exactly.
But here you present in terms of SUSY, right?
No, this is the mass of the charged Higgs.
Yeah, this is tangent beta.
Right.
So this is not in the SUSY
context? Not necessarily. It can be in the SUSY context because, in SUSY, still, you have some splitting between the charged Higgs mass and the neutral additional scalar.
Yeah.
And so typically, for the neutral Higgs searches, you're doing this plot for the mass of the neutral scalar.
Yes.
So it's kind of a little bit independent. And even more independent is if you go, indeed, beyond the minimal supersymmetric model, in which the mass splitting between the charged state and the neutral state can be basically almost everything. Can be quite large.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there are not collider bounds on the plot that you're showing.
Yeah, actually, so I didn't comment on this, but there are actually collider bounds. And this is what I represent here in kind of orange and yellow.
Oh, okay.
And you see that they are kind of complementary with the bound that we learned from this B meson decay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what is the role of our 125 GB Higgs? The role is pretty simple because if you want to address the hierarchy problem, generically you learn that you need something that is interacting with the Higgs. And then if this something is charged under our own gauge symmetries, generically we'll change the coupling of the Higgs with two photons or two gluons. But this is pretty general because every time that you have new physics particles interacting with the Higgs that are not too heavy, generically we expect to have some deviation of the coupling of the Higgs with the standard model fields if compared to the standard model prediction, okay? So having measurements of these couplings can tell us indirectly about the presence of new physics. And so this is actually the status now. So this I'm collecting the present measurements of the coupling of the Higgs with, for example, gauge bosons, bottom quarks, tau lepton, and so on and so forth. These couplings are normalized to the standard model prediction. So if you are at one, that means that your measurement is kind of consistent with the standard model prediction. We see that the errors are huge. We see also that indeed we don't even have a clear evidence for the Higgs coupling to bottom quarks at all, could be even zero. And in the future, we expect to have really a huge improvement. The aim is to have measurements of these Higgs couplings at, say, the 5% level in the future of LHC. So we'll get to know more about new physics theories predicting a shift in the Higgs coupling to standard model particles. You can get to know about the presence of stops, because stops, indeed, will generically introduce some deviation in the coupling of the Higgs to two gluons if compared to the standard model prediction. So there are models of light stops that could be probed in this way. So in this plot, I'm basically showing the models that you can probe with the measurement of these couplings at a level of 13, 5, or 3%. On the y-axis, I'm showing basically the average of the stop masses. On the x-axis is a parameter that is basically telling us how much the stops are mixed. And these are basically bounds, or in principle, you know, discovery potentials of light stops simply using this measurement. Okay? And this is completely independent on the possibility of discovering stops directly, because we don't really need to specify the way in which stops decay. Okay? And I like also to bring another example for additional particles that are a little bit more kind of nasty, that are called the Staus, so the superpartners of the Taus. So these particles are very, very, very complicated to be looked for directly. So LHC experimentalists have really a nightmare trying to probe directly Staus. But actually, again, you can do the analysis, as we have shown in this paper, to see how well you can probe models with light Staus using the measurement of the Higgs coupling to photons. Okay? So this is a pretty general argument. I've shown you these two examples. But also, actually, what I find very, very interesting is not only, you know, the possibility of testing the Higgs couplings to standard model particles and comparing to the standard model, but also the possibility that actually these measurements could tell us much, much more about the theory of the universe. And the reason is that, so what we have shown is that actually if in the future we'll be able to discover some deviation of some Higgs couplings, say the Higgs coupling to diphoton if compared to the standard model prediction, then in general the shape of our Higgs potential will change if compared to the shape that I showed you before, just extrapolating the standard model until the Planck scale. So what you end up having, so suppose that in the future we are lucky and we'll be measure a deviation of the Higgs to diphoton coupling, then what this deviation is telling us is that we have new light degrees of freedom interacting with the Higgs. Generically, we end up thinking about having a theory with additional minima, but now these additional minima are at energies much, much below the Planck scale. And this is very interesting because this is a general feature of all those models that are predicting an enhancement of the coupling of the Higgs with two photons. So as we have shown in this paper, again with collaborators in the Chicago area, having a measurement of this type, so if the Higgs to the photon coupling is kind of large if compared to the standard model prediction, then we'll have a vacuum, so our electric vacuum will be unstable. Okay? So this is a very strong argument that is telling us even more about the importance of having the measurement of Higgs couplings, because Higgs couplings can tell us incredibly much more about our theory and the evolution of our universe, actually. Okay? So this leads me to my conclusions. Strongly believe that we'll have great times for particle physics because we have plenty of theory questions that are open, plenty of experimental data, because as I said, the DLHC just ran for the first, say, 3-4 years. We're having a shutdown of the machine preparing for the next stage at which the energy will be actually lifted up to reach something like 13, 14 TeV. Actually, in a few weeks time scale, the machine will be on again, so we'll have more data. And actually, this phase with this energy of 14 TeV will last until something like 2022, within when we expect to collect something like 10 times more data than what we have at the moment. Beyond that, we know that there will be another kind of sizable, you know, few years shutdown of the machine, because the machine will be prepared for the what we call the high luminosity stage, at which the energy is kept constant. But we expect to collect a much larger set of data. So something like the aim is to have something like 100 times more data than what we have at the moment. And this run will go until the 30s or so. So, but the DLHC is not the only machine, as I was arguing in this talk, because we have plenty of machines, high-energy machines that are more dedicated to test new physics indirectly. And also didn't speak much about, but we have plenty of dark matter experiments beyond LHC. So in this respect, we have really a huge experimental effort looking for new physics. And this experimental effort will last for many years. So in my opinion, we have all the tools to make our own expedition to the new physics scale. So as I said already, we are here. The Higgs is here. We have plenty of open problems that are telling us that might be something. Maybe it's closed here. Maybe it's a little bit heavier. And as I said, we have really great hopes to probe new physics, either directly or indirectly. And the point of this, one of the main points of this talk was to show you that actually now we have a brand new route to make this expedition, that is the Higgs boson. And simply using the Higgs boson that we have discovered, we have really plenty of opportunities of testing theories of new physics. And this is the way in which I place myself. So as I said, we have plenty of theory problems, new models that have been studied since a few years that I plan to have a big role in understanding better and better and in writing down more and more compelling models. And then as I've argued also in this talk, to work in kind of close contact with experimentalists to really try to maximize our searches for new physics and our hope to find new physics soon. Thanks.
Questions?
Okay, so aha. That's a theoretical question and an experimental question. Mm-hmm. So let me start by an experimental question. So I guess you mentioned 100 TeV collider, I guess, in your
right.
So where do you think, like, what is the highest that you think we can push? This energy, I don't know if you have unlimited budget.
Oh, in the very, very optimistic case. Yeah. So technologically, I think that the 100 TeV is not really much of an issue,
okay.
Even at the moment. So there is a lot of discussion actually understanding how to build this machine. And the main question is, indeed, if you want to keep the cost low, it's also technologically a little bit, quite a bit challenging because you need really great magnets, if compared to the magnets that we have now that we are using for the LHC. But actually, there is this competing factor. On one side, having huge magnets, so huge magnetic fields. On the other side, having circles that are large. So if you have a circle that is very, very large, so if you don't have a problem of investing money on this, then also the magnets that we have at the moment, or a little bit upgraded, are quite good to get to this energy. Of course, the question is, being concretely, the price tag that you put on this machine, and so how much money we're able to allocate to this machine.
Technologically, you think you can get to 100 TeV and
yes.
Beyond that?
Like, yes.
Is there, do you foresee a technological challenge, or do people talk about like...
Of course, I mean, it's a machine that is, you don't build it tomorrow, but I don't see any, showstopper, basically.
But can you go back to a PEV, for example?
That is, well, you start to think about, see conferences that are like also because, as I said, you have these two competing factors. At a certain point, you are limited. Yeah. Also because, as I said, you have two competing factors, magnets and circumference. But then if you go with a larger and larger circumference, then it's also a matter of having something that is stable because, But, for 100 TeV, that is not really a...
So my other question is theoretical. So I guess there is, of course, a much more outstanding hierarchy problem, which is the cosmological constant
correct.
Problem.
Yeah.
And it's much harder to come up with a symmetry or
right.
any of the obvious ways that solving this. The Higgs hierarchy problem doesn't work for cosmological constant because we know all the physics about a million electron volts.
Right.
So then there is an argument that maybe we shouldn't try to solve hierarchy problems because... Whatever solution, for the bigger hierarchy problems, symmetries don't seem to be solving it. So maybe we should just let them be or let anthropics take care of it or something like that.
Sure. I mean, definitely there are, theories that are going more in this direction of anthropics to indeed explaining why the Higgs is where it is. Mm-hmm. That is a possibility. That is also a personal question, right? What you feel more compelling? From my point of view, I feel more compelling the idea of really trying to write down a theory beyond anthropics that is able to explain why we have this large splitting between these two physics scales and why, and especially why, the two physics scales are connected by quantum.
Don't you think that if you come up with a solution to the Higgs hierarchy problem, you should also at the same time try to expand the cosmological constant problem, or they should just decouple the two and don't let them back?
I think all approaches are very, very fair. my approach is kind of decoupling the two problems, but is as I said, is something that is I'm really up to discussions. You know, is.
Maybe I should sound an interloper because I'm a member of Atlas, I'm an experimenter. But I saw the coming back to the motivation for 100 TV, or the next provider.
Yep.
With the Alex, we had a very clear motivation that we knew that something had to happen around the TV because we were violating the standard model wouldn't work. So that was a very good science and political and all of the motivations. Because you may not know the answers to the questions, but you know you would answer. You wouldn't just come back and say we should have built a video.
Right.
I think we need something similar.
Not
just say, okay, we go further into the desert and look, there's more desert.
Right.
So there was a paper, so thinking about this, there was a paper by Yekul and Kose about looking at self-consistency of the standard model, I think in terms of cross-section, the main one was in terms of utility violation, from very high multiplicity collisions. And for very high energy cosmic ray collisions and things, that you could start setting some bounds. They were way above 100 TeV, but they were a long way below the Planck scale.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's any future in that? Are you aware of, that was just one paper I read. Mm-hmm. An experiment that made some sense to me, and it's not gone far enough to motivate machines we could build yet. But is there, do you think that's worth pursuing? Are there other self-consistency checks within the standard model where you could set a scale and say there must be new physics here? Along those lines, along very generic lines, kind of unitarity arguments and things, rather than ramification couplings.
Right. Yeah, that's certainly a possible route, as you mentioned this paper. A little bit of a problem is that I am a little bit skeptical that what we learn is indeed a scale of collision that is doable. Indeed, you know. So more concretely speaking, in terms of the physics case for going to high energy, this is something that that started very, very kind of seriously, say 2 years ago or so. And there are two efforts that are going on. One is at CERN and one in China, as I show here. And so there are a lot of theorists, the experimentalists, including myself, that are involved in trying to build really the physics case of why we want this machine and what it's good for. And why 100 TeV? I agree that up to now, so it's pretty much work in progress. And up to now, it feels a little bit different than, you know, for the physics case of the LHC, when we know that, you know, as I argued at the beginning of this talk, we really needed something. And then we have discovered the Higgs. I personally believe that there are very good arguments. For example, if you go in the direction of probing dark matter models, and what you gain going to higher energy. I had a couple of papers about this. In particular, there are kind of well-motivated dark matter models, like supersymmetric models where the Higgs-Sino is a pure state and is a dark matter candidate, that actually could have really a lot of benefit going to this high energy. I agree with you that it's pretty much work in progress, and up to now I fully agree that there is not really a clear physics case to say, look, if you go to 100 TeV, if you go to 90 TeV, either you see this or you don't see this, but you have a big problem. Now we are not at this stage, but I think it's very important as a theorist really to try to understand what models are telling you and how you can make the physics case to really, you know, get funds for building the next generation of collider, basically.
Okay.